Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you decided to join us tonight. I think we've got a most wonderful topic, and our guest tonight is sure to have a very compelling dialogue. The topic tonight is the 12 archetypes of the heart, and our guest is Perron Bear, and he's done so much work with the heart, and we're going to have a delightful conversation, but holy cow, what is today? We're not even 24 hours out of the presidential election in the United States. And, you know, I kind of bite my tongue when I see people on social media talking about thing one and thing two as possible candidates for the presidency in the United States. Because the elephant in the room, because the untold power of our human story is we the people, you, me, us. In America, we have hundreds of millions of people, and there's over 7 billion on the planet. The idea that a single persona in any role whatsoever as being the ultimate decider of the fate of billions of people is laughable. And the notion of how the future is going to be sculpted is decided by we the people, the collective consciousness of humanity. We are a personification of the process of creation that is happening all the time. Creation doesn't ever get turned on or turned off. It's always on. It's always responding to us. And we create our future by what we put our consciousness on, our awareness on. And our karma can tend to keep us caught in reactive mental and emotional patterning. And that keeps the story the same. It recreates, it reactivates habitual karmic responses from our own subconscious. But the elephant in the room is our divinity. What nobody's been talking about is the idea that you and me, us as human beings, have this ultimate source of power from within us. And it's put there for us to use. You know, if you look at history, it's pretty easy to see that the God divine really doesn't do a very good job at stopping wars. God doesn't really stop wars. We've watched several world wars transpire over years while tens of millions of people are put to death. No divine being comes from the sky. No gods, no booming voice comes out and says, knock that stuff off. You guys have so much potential and you decide to fight wars with each other. That doesn't happen. What is the most powerful substance on earth? I mean, the old mind would say, well, it's God. Well, God's not going to show up in a big divine way. It's just not. I mean, how many centuries do we have to click off to figure that out? But God will show up in you, through you, as you, because you're a personification of the divine. The divine is within you now. And certainly pray to God, ask, and then listen, because we're here for the human experience. Your soul's not going to reach over your shoulder. Your soul won't reach over your shoulder and push your karmic lessons out of the way. It's not going to happen. The divine's not going to come down as some glowing orb and wipe suffering off the planet. It's not going to happen. All resolution to our human condition will come through us, the humans, living out this condition. And what I really like about our show tonight is we're going to talk about the power of you, the power of your heart, the power of your desire to make a difference, the compassion of your heart to end suffering, the forgiveness of yourself and others, that we may transcend the stories of the past, that we, the human beings, can be the vessel, the conduit of unconditional love for all that is. Your relationship with your divinity is relationship with all that is. And when you can love all that is, there will be nothing contrary to you. Karma, by its very nature, is posturing with what is. But enough about that. Let's get to the good stuff. I'm so excited for this show. Perron Bear is our guest tonight, and he's part of the I Am Heart Institute, which he created with his wife, Susanna Bear. And she's going to be on our show down the road, so I'm delighted to have them both on. Perron is an author, teacher, and co-founder of the Institute for Applied Meditation on the Heart. He's co-authored several books on the heart, Living from the Heart, Energizing Your Heart in Four Dimensions, Follow Your Heart, The Map to Illumination. I love those titles. And I love the topic of the heart. From my perspective, it's the power center of our human persona. So without further ado, join me in welcoming Perron to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How did you come about studying the heart so intently in your life?
Well, I was trained in the old school where we tried to go up and out and go into what is called samadhi through transcendence. And I did that. I have to say I actually mastered the process of samadhi and was into it for a long time. But it became clear to me that it was not very practical. In fact, it really works against practical life, because you get so sensitive and you get so aloof that practical things don't seem to matter much. And that isn't true. I mean, practical things matter a lot. What we do with our life is very, very important. So my wife and I decided that we needed to sort of reframe the spiritual work that we were doing and get more centered and become more useful. So we're emphasizing purpose and usefulness and helpfulness, and the heart is the key to all that. So instead of trying to leave our bodies, we're trying to achieve the great spiritual states while being in the body. And that's pretty exciting, and it's pretty new. So this work that we're going to talk about today with the archetypes of the heart is an exploration of the kinds of things one can discover by working with the heart, the kinds of qualities and powers and assets or resources that are there in the heart available for anybody.
So as we have the 12 archetypes of the heart as a focus on the show, do you want to just take a moment and give us an overview of the archetypes so we have some context to our conversation?
Sure. So it starts with the question, how many kinds of people are there? You know, there's types of people. So the word for that is archetype. And how many different archetypes, could we conceive of? So there are teachers that have hundreds of archetypes. Well, that's too many, because then you can't remember them all and it gets too complicated. Carl Jung had a system of archetypes using 16, and some people use as few as 4. Astrology uses 12, and there's a reason for that. It's 4 times 3. So we also use 12. It seems like the right size of number. We can remember 12 archetypes pretty easily, and yet there's enough distinction between them that it's useful. You know, you can say, well, that's that person is a different archetype, or, you know, dissimilar to that one. Now, the next question is, what do you base the archetypes on? So Carl Jung, in his system, he based his 16 archetypes on observations of the behaviors of his clients. He had a lot of clients, and he sort of, you know, reflected upon how they were different, and came up with this, you know, with his system of the differences in people. So his system is based on behaviors. Well, we're mystics, you know, we're meditators. We see it a little differently. We want to value the behavior and the personality, but we want to go, what's behind that? What's driving that? Why are people behaving the way they do? And what hidden potentials might they have that don't come out in their behavior? So our system is based on energy, and there are different kinds of energies. The classic description of the kinds of energies, and these are now... these are now identified in science. They're called subtle energy. There's an institute of subtle energy from which Susanna and I received an award, a Founders Award. But there are scientists studying this thing called subtle energy. It's a non-visible, you know, behind the scenes, the stuff everything's made of. And so the ancients described four kinds of subtle energy, and they called them air, fire, water, and earth. Well, that makes sense. I mean, that's sort of intuitive. And so when I started working with the system, by the way, I developed this for use with a client. I was doing management consulting at Citibank. And this client had a need to build a better team. He had a series of, you know, direct reports, people that reported to him, and they were not in alignment, and they didn't sync together very well. And it was because they couldn't appreciate each other. They couldn't understand, you know, how a person is so different from one would still be valuable. You know, people appreciate people like themselves, and they don't appreciate sometimes the people that are very different. So the archetype system lays out this map of all the different kinds of people there are. And as a result, you can see, well, they're really very different, and each has its value. Each has its place in the team. So I was able to identify for this team of executives at Citibank how they were different and how they could interact and recognize and value each other. Okay, so the matrix is 4x3. So it's air, fire, water, and earth, and then three kinds of each of those. Now, this gives us 12, obviously, and as I say, it's enough difference that we can really make use of these distinctions. Now, air, fire, water, and earth, okay, so everybody understands what those are, but we mean something a little different by it. By water, we don't mean physical water. We mean the energy that makes water, the energy that makes things flow, let's say, the energy that makes things bend and soften and be easy and be beautiful. So water produces beauty. The energy called water produces beauty and closeness and connection and that kind of thing. So we're not talking about physical water, we're talking about energy. And the energy of earth produces stability. It produces steadiness, dependability, that kind of thing. See? So there are these four different kinds of energies. Now the energies actually correspond to science because there are four states of matter. And there's one energy that produces each of those different states of matter. You know, gas, liquid, and solid. Well, there's a fourth state of matter, and that's called plasma. And that corresponds to fire. So there are these four states of matter, gaseous, plasmic, fluid, and solid. And those are the concepts we're working with. Now, in other words, there's sort of an intuitive sense, isn't there? Like, you can see, In a person, in some people you see solidity, and in some people you see airiness, very free thinking, very big thinking. You know, it's a very different type of person. So this is the basis of our system. Now, the neat thing about it is that because it's about energy, it's about experience. You can experientially determine the type of archetype that a person is without passing through their mental concept of their self. You see, the other archetype systems that I've ever seen, they're all based on questionnaires. You sort of ask the person. So, you know, you ask them a bunch of questions, 50 questions maybe, something like that. And then these are categorized and added up and so on, and you've got the archetype. Well, that depends then on how much the person knows about themselves. And also it depends on behavior, because their questions are about behavior. When you want to dig a little deeper and see what's behind that, what is the energy of people, then you're no longer dealing with questionnaires. You're dealing with things that you can observe but maybe not talk about. For instance, you're listening to my voice. People have very different voices. And we can learn and train ourselves to identify these 12 archetypes in a person's voice. And that's much more reliable than asking them, you know, what do you think? Are you intuitive or extrovert? Or, you know, this is proof. You can prove what archetype they are by objective standards. Another thing that we do is we look at a person's walk. Now, a walk is a very interesting thing, because if you tried to walk consciously, you'd probably fall over. It's so complicated the way the muscles work. And just to get a natural walk that doesn't look stiff, you have to really let it go. And you just, you know, let it happen. And yet you notice that people have very different walks. So we identify 12 kinds of walks. And we, in our seminars, we have people walk. And we're all watching, and the self-consciousness goes away in a minute, and they just walk, and then they're happy walking. And then we look at it and we say, there you go, there's the walk of a knight, or there's the walk of a healer, or there's the walk of a scientist. They're different walks. So we have a 6 or 8 of these different kinds of exercises that we do, like make a drawing. You know, the way you draw and what you include in a drawing is indicative of this deeper sense of yourself. It's very interesting. It's a lovely process, because they're all positive. We don't have any bad archetypes. You know, they're all divine qualities. Yeah, right. It's all aspects of God, you know, showing up. Like you said in your introduction, it's showing up in people. God is showing up in each of us as ourselves. And
right.
And yet this divine essence shows up differently in each of us. And this, you know, this has been a conundrum for the ancient mystics for a long time. It's like, okay, we're one being, but we're also unique. So how does that work? How can we be one being and be unique at the same time? So those are two ends of the spectrum. And in the middle of the spectrum is the archetype. So we're each unique, but we each are examples of a different archetype. And those archetypes are all part of the one being. But it helps us understand that the ways in which oneness can show up in uniqueness.
I like that. Well, so as a listener, I'm listening to the show, and I'm listening to you talk about archetypes. So how would that relate to me, the listener? What kind of results do you get? I mean, what kind of person would engage this material, and to what end?
Well, let me give you an example of the first set of archetypes is in air. And I think we can all relate to the air parts of ourselves. So the way this energy of air shows up in us, it illuminates our minds. It makes us quick and makes us intelligent. But there's different ways that that happens still. So one kind of mind, we call it the mind of the scientist. This person has a laser focus, very, really capable of tremendous concentration, really focuses on one thing at a time, penetrates and pierces into that topic, whatever it is they're thinking about or working on. So very focused, and they're able to crack problems that way, because if you stare at something long enough, it'll reveal itself to you. This mind is penetrating and piercing and specific. The opposite end of that spectrum is what we call the oracle. The mind of the oracle is wide open. They function sort of like a satellite dish instead of a laser beam. You know, they're wide open, and they're just picking up signals from the universe. So they're very intuitive and very creative, and they're sort of tuned in. You know, they're getting messages from other people, from the atmosphere, from the wind and the rain. I mean, everything speaks. But the right. oracle gets these messages in a rather non-specific way. They're coded messages. They're symbolic messages, and we intentionally use the word oracle to refer.
We might,
you know, back to the, yeah.
Your audio might be cutting out, but you're back now, so keep going.
Oh, sorry. Let's hope it works. We use the word oracle because there was a famous oracle in Delphi in Greece long ago, who was able to get these messages. Her name was Pythia. She was a great oracle in the time of Apollo. So all through history, there have been people that are so good at this. They see the context. You know, they see the big picture. So these are the two extremes: the big picture guy and the real specific focused person. And one is very conceptual. The other is very specific. And then there's a third person who's a combination of these two, and we call that person the priest or the priestess. And it gives an interesting meaning to that word priest, because, see, what we see as the priest is the one who can receive this message, like right out of the heavens, but then translate it into specific words. So the priest is a translator, an interpreter, someone that can take the symbolic language and turn it into real conceptual language and specific language. And they're very good communicators, and they are very influential because they can capture these big ideas and make them understandable. So imagine you have a team of people and they're working together, and you've got a group of scientist types. Well, that's, you know, that can be very nice, but then they get lost in their specificity, in their focus, you know, and they don't get the big picture. They need somebody that comes along and says, "Hey, have you thought of this? You know, or what else is happening?"
Right.
And so you need a team of people, and not only that, but actually all of these 12 archetypes are in us, each one of us. It's just that some are so well developed they hide the other ones. Like if you're a knight, this is a fire type. You have this incredible ability to do whatever you want to do. Knights can they're just very independent, and they're very capable, and they can just act, you know, they can do things. And if you have a lot of that kind of energy, that may hide your oracle aspect, for instance.
Oh, I see.
You might not even have discovered it because you don't use it. You have something else that works so well, you use that all the time. So what we find is that people habituate, they overuse one or two of these archetypes that they have developed, and they don't notice the other ones. So part of our work is to help people identify these hidden qualities. See, so we don't think that a person is just one or two archetypes. We think they should become, eventually, all these archetypes. They should have access to everything. They should be able to do earth and do water and fire and air as the need arises, you know. So if you're working with a person who has a lot of water, you don't want to come along with a lot of fire. That isn't going to work. Those are incompatible. If you're trying to relate to somebody that is very emotional and artistic, like a water archetype, then you either want to be also like that, or you want to be somebody who's very dependable, like a base, you know, like somebody that can support that. So there's a whole theory here about what kinds of people work together easily and what kind don't, and then how you can modify yourself, how you can tune yourself to one of these subtle energies so that you become harmonious. We don't want to be fixed, you know, like set in a box. I'm just this kind, and if you don't like that kind of person, then you can't deal with me. No, we want to be able to harmonize with anyone. So to do that, we can't expect them to change. We have to tune ourselves to be suitable, harmonious with the other person. And we can do that through meditation.
It's like you're a chameleon and tuned into the moment for what the situation of the moment's calling for.
Yeah.
I mean, like you were saying, the oracle is wide open and the scientist is drilled down into detail. And if you can't bring both of those to the table, you'll have ethereal ideas with the oracle and they'll never come into physical form through the focus of the scientist. I mean, in a general way.
You're absolutely right, Les. That's a really common problem. Or you have somebody who just drills into something, but you know they're missing some important thing that they didn't notice. So then let's talk about the water types.
Sure.
In some of the spiritual schools, they talk about a different kind of trinity, a trinity of lover and beloved and the partner who is both. So it's interesting when we look at people's relationships. One of the things I ask people, like in couples counseling or something, is, okay, who's the lover here and who's the beloved? See, the lover is the one who initiates it, makes it happen, sends out the energy, and the beloved is the one who receives and is open and lets the other person in. Sometimes people can do both, but typically we have our favorite, we have our habit, and that's because there's the energy has matured in us in one of these ways rather than the other, and we've gotten good at that. So there are people who are very good at surrender and willingness and acceptance and tolerance, and that's the beloved. And there are people who are creators and nurturers, and those are the lovers. And there's a few of these rare people who can do both, and we call that the partner. The partners can get along with anybody. What a beautiful thing that is to be able to get along with anybody. You know?
Oh, sure.
But mostly people say, well, I want to be loved. Or they say, you know, I want someone I can love. I want to be useful to somebody. I want to be helpful. So I'm of that type. I'm typically in my relationship and even among my friends and so on, I'm typically the one who is the nurturer, the provider of this stream of love. It just comes out of me. But of course, what do I want? I want to be completed And so I also am looking for somebody that, you know, will love me. And but I'm not good at that. And there are other people that are real good at that. They're so easy to love. You meet them and you're in love with them. You know, it's just, they're so, because they let you in. They let you into their heart.
Right.
And it's a skill. It's a lovely skill. And so we say the beloved creates a lover, and the lover creates a beloved.
I like that.
And then you have the partner that can do either. So they have different roles, you know, because the lover we call an artist. They're people that create beauty, and the disciple, that the beloved one we call a disciple, they're ones who appreciate beauty. And those are different roles, and they both work together. It's like any artist wants to have an appreciator of what they've created, and in fact they get their energy from that sense of the other person who's drawing it out of them, you know, by appreciating what they do. Active and receptive, you know.
Well, you know, I think about that balance of passion, because perhaps in an Italian sports car, as a random example, if I'm the designer of this car, my passion is to contemplate the nature of the car that will make it an exhilarating experience. And so my passion is, well, what's the angle of the tire, the camber, what's the wheelbase, where's the center of gravity? And so I passionately, I dump my passion into the creation of this vehicle, and then fast forward into production, and here comes a car lover, and a car lover looks at the car and says, oh my, I love how that sits so well on the ground. I love the stature of the tires. And then they go driving and they cut into a curve and they accelerate in the curve and they can feel the tires just grab the road. That's passion too. And it, both of them are making love. I mean, it's like this temporally spaced intercourse.
Yeah, that's very poetic, guys. You're very creative. Very nice.
Well, I'm following what you're saying here. So,
yeah, absolutely. So in the fire type of energy, we have fire which comes out and fire which goes in. Actually, that's the principle in all of the elements. The element can be directed outward and it can be directed inward. See, so air directed outward gives this laser focus of the scientist, and directed inward it becomes the oracle. So for the fire, when the energy is directed outward, you get a warrior, somebody that can just, you know, fight any battle, charge up any hill, give them the hardest task you can, and they love it. The warrior people are active people, and they're looking for something challenging to do. That's how they get their sense of meaning and value. If you take that same energy and take it inside, it becomes a purifying quality. Like if you take fire inside and you don't express it in action, it becomes like an inner fire, a purifying fire. And this makes one a chameleon. We call it a dervish. A person who is just absolutely free, and they're irreverent, outrageous, ecstatic, joyous. They're
lucid.
Is a very fun person, very very fun person, you know. But they've taken that energy inside, and they're very committed to freedom and honesty. And you can't get such a person to work by paying them. You know, they only do what they want to do.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
and the person that we combine these two, the warrior and the dervish, we also call the dervish the jester sometimes. You combine those two and you get something we call the knight. The knight has the power of the warrior, but he only uses it for idealistic things. So you can only get a knight to do something which appeals to their sense of virtue and ideal and so on. See, so for instance, there are people that are very powerful, but they apply their power to things that are just not important. Like, you know, there's a whole company of people that work for Coca-Cola that are concerned about beating Pepsi-Cola. And who cares?
Right.
You know? But they spend spend all their energy on that, you know? So that's an example of a warrior who might be doing something very challenging and getting really rewarded for it, but it doesn't matter. It's not important. And then you have people that are very tuned into what's important, but they don't feel that it's necessary to do anything about it. They tend to be very cynical, typically, the dervishes. They're very cynical, like, well, you know, this place is a mess. This country, for instance, is a mess. But, you know, it's just, I don't have to do anything about it. It's just funny. So the knight says, no, you know, this is something. This here's a task I can devote my life to. And they get very specific and very idealistic, and boy, you can't stop them. So
right.
See, these are all wonderful qualities, and there's no one better than the other. They're all good and they're all necessary, and we'd like to eventually be able to access all of these things in ourselves. The joy of a dervish is so infectious. It's like a virus. It's so infectious. It's beautiful. It just lights up a whole group.
Right.
But don't
yeah.
ask a dervish to do anything. You know, they're not going to accomplish anything. But they are a lot of fun, and so all of these things we need. Then, lastly, just let me speak for a moment about the earth types.
Sure.
You can take the earth energy and send it out, or you can take it and send it in. So the outgoing earth energy makes something we call the trustee, the one who takes care of people, the one who you can depend upon to be there for you. This guy is the helper. He will they're like a protection. They protect you. But if you take that energy in the other direction, it becomes what we call a healer. So the difference is this: there are rules in life, laws, and the people who enforce the laws and obey the laws, and those are the outgoing energy people. But the other side of that is that for every law there's an exception, and so for every principle there's an example of where you really should set that aside and not apply it in this moment. You know, there needs to be exceptions. To make a law work, there have to be exceptions. And those exceptions, that's what a healer is. A healer is somebody that says, well, you know, maybe you made yourself sick. Maybe you didn't. We're not going to judge that. We just want to help you. We're not going to apply the rules. And, you know, you shouldn't have done this and you shouldn't have done that. And, in the Bible, Jesus relates illness to sin. He says at one point, your sins are forgiven, now you're healed. So that's the idea that when we violate these rules, we get sick. But the healer says, I don't care what you did. I just want to help you. You know, like Mother Teresa
right.
finds somebody in the gutter and doesn't ask, how'd you get there? What have you done with yourself? She just says, you know, this is somebody who needs help. So the healer is very non-judgmental and just of service. And there are wonderful people like this. They're just so, they have that sense that they're going to help you, but they're going to help you in a different way than the trustee. The trustee is like a lawyer, but the healer is somebody that will forgive you and help you out of the situation you're in. And the combination of these is a king or a queen, a majestic being who is reliable, dependable, responsible, magnetic, majestic, noble, you know, great, great, great beings. So each of these different archetypes has their characteristic problems in life. And like the knight is somebody that's hard to form a relationship because they're so independent. but they also have their own strengths. And so what we want to do for ourselves and for the people we know is appreciate their archetype and help them be better at it, and rather than being mad at them because they're not some other archetype, you know, like you just shouldn't expect a warrior you know, to be a beloved. That's a very different kind of person, or a king. And we often get mad at somebody because they're not being what we want them to be. Well, let's appreciate what they are. You know, what the kind of person they are is very valuable. And then, how can you help a person grow? How can you help them develop more of these archetypes? Because they're all in there. They're in there in their soul. They're maybe buried, but they're in there. And a person wants to develop all these different qualities, but they need help. You know, they need the right atmosphere, the right situation, the right partner. So it's a very rich system, and it's a developmental system. You know, it's not something which is fixed and that's it. You are this kind and that's it. No, we're constantly evolving, and this matrix system helps us understand how we can move. What can we open up next? Because it's not random. You don't go from one end of the matrix to the other. You go next door. You know, so the matrix gives us a sense of the sequence by which we can unfold ourselves.
Well, do you notice when you have workshops, do you have students that come in and they've been living in maybe a prominently air arena and their fire perhaps is dormant or something like that? And then by the end of the workshop, they've awakened aspect of their selves that had been dormant for a long time? I mean, do you see that kind of a change?
Yes. Yeah. And we have a seminar, a group retreat, we call it, coming up like that in Santa Barbara, California, March 3 to 8. So the 3rd of March. And it's in this lovely place in Santa Barbara. And it's on our website. Our website is iamheart.org. iamheart.org. And you have all the details about it are in there. But that's exactly what we want to do. We want to help a person discover another part of themselves. So like if we ask them about their water qualities, they might not identify that at all. Like, well, I'm not that kind of person. You know, so often people say, I'm not that kind of person. Or, you know, we say, well, you know, why don't you write a book? Oh, I couldn't write a book. I'm not that kind of person.
Right.
Well, that's just not true. You know, it just means you haven't exercised that part of yourself yet. But it's in there, and if you want to bring it out, you can. So, in our group retreat, we explore all these different things by music, by self-produced sounds, kinds of mantras, by different kinds of meditations. We have 12 different meditations. See, to bring out each one of these different qualities. These different archetypes. We have walks that we practice. If you practice walking in a different way, it can have an effect on opening up that part of yourself. Different ways of breathing, and we have a whole series of exercises to first to identify and then to unfold the archetypes.
Now, we've been talking about the archetypes, and I love how you've walked through them and give us some context behind them. And when we talk about them as being archetypes of the heart, how do these particular characteristics play out from that heart space? Because some of this seems like it'd be a function of your ego or mind. How does that translate into heart attributes?
Boy, you are good, Les. This is you're so interesting as an interviewer. You ask good questions. So we say there are three different archetypes. There's an archetype, the eternal archetype, like what you've always been, but it's mostly unknown to us. And then there's the archetype that you are right now. This is what you've practiced. what you've developed through experience and practice, and you've learned how to work as a trustee, or how to work as a dervish or something. You know, each one of these archetypes is so rich that we have to practice it, and after a few decades we get it right, you know. But then there's another archetype, the third archetype, which is our emerging archetype. So the archetype that we are presently good at is probably something that was a response to a challenge. You know, it's like, well, this is what we learned how to do in order to meet the needs of our life. It may not have anything to do with our eternal archetype. It often does, but it may not. I mean, I've counseled people that presented as a knight, you know, with a lot of power and gusto and energy, but internally they weren't that at all. It was something, it's an act they put on because that's how they make their money, and that's how they've learned to do that because it was it worked in their situation in their childhood or whatever. But it doesn't mean that that's their native archetype. So that's more in the mind, you see, like you say, more in the mind and the ego. But the heart is what you're drawn to. So in our group retreat, we have a series of experiences where we sort of expose people to the energy of an archetype that they may not identify in themselves. But as soon as we turn it on, oh, that's where they want to be. And they think, this is so beautiful, this is so wonderful. Well, that's demonstrating to us what's emerging, what's coming. People are attracted to the archetype that they're becoming, not the archetype they are. That's like ho-hum old hat. But the archetype that they want to be, that's the kind of people that they're attracted to. It's the kind of opportunities that they're attracted to. And when we present that kind of energy in the workshop, they love it. That's like, yes, this is what I'm looking for. So it's very interesting to see that difference, that there's some longing in us to unfold a part of ourselves that we sense is there. And we first notice it in another person. Like if you just think about the kind of person that you really admire most, that is your future. I mean, that's the kind of person you'd like to be. And the reason that you can even recognize the value of that person is because that quality is in you and you value it in yourself. And you'd like to be able to turn that on. You'd like to be able to be like that. So, you know, whether we're looking for a lover or a business partner or a friend, you know, we're attracted to these people that represent what we could be. And if only we had a way to explore that. Well, that's what this archetype work is about. It's how to explore being the kind of person that you long to be.
And there's something that happens when you bring your heart into your everyday space. It so often when you propagate around in the collective consciousness, everybody's staring at their silicon appliance in their hand, and and they spend so much time in their mind, and there's not that much heart space in their inspiration, choices, or actions. And when I mean, we're talking about the unfolding archetypes that are revealing themselves. When you look at the ego, and if you stay in mind and you don't bring that heart space in, sure, you can go through your life and maybe are successful in the sense that you know how to create a profitable living, and you do the things that your ego enjoys. But there's something else that happens when you honor. When you can teach your ego to understand the value, and that value shows up as excitement, as satisfaction, as fulfillment. When you can teach your ego to understand the value of bringing that heart space into more of an every day, every hour, even every moment type of interaction with not only yourself, but your environment. At the end of the day, at the end of every day, there's this deep well of satisfaction that comes from within your heart that floods yeah. out of you. And yeah. if you can get your ego to taste that and then trust the power of the wisdom of your heart and then show up as the mechanism to bring action to that inspiration, then damn, you every day is a life of exuding joy because you're honoring your potential. You're tuned into that heart space, so you're connected with that deeper, authentic part of who you are. You yeah, get some of that yeah. on your tongue, and you just can't put the spoon down. And I mean, you want to get another spoon and just double fist it and delve in and swim and live there.
That's well put. Yeah, we say the ego is not a problem if the heart's in charge. If the ego's in charge, it's a problem. But if the heart's in charge, the ego can be very useful. In fact, the ego allows us to be responsible. And we couldn't be responsible. We couldn't say, I'll do this and I'll take it on if we didn't have an ego. But the important thing is this sense of purpose that is hidden in the heart. The heart knows in what purpose we've been given, what we've been created for. And when we go into our heart, we find it. And it just changes our life. It gives us a sense that there's something important here that I was meant to do, and I've been preparing for it in everything I've ever done. Every person I've ever met and every skill I've ever developed, they're all going to be useful in the fulfillment of this purpose that my life is really all about. But I didn't even know what it was until, I went into my heart and found it. And then one sees that, well, these archetypes, these are my tools. I'm going to need these things. Sometimes I need to be a warrior, and sometimes I need to be an oracle, and sometimes I need to be a king in order to accomplish what I've been given to do. And if I just stay with one of these archetypes that I've habituated and gotten used to, and I think that's all I am, well, I'm not going to be successful. I'm not going to be able to meet the need as the need arises. There are always obstacles. There are always obstacles in our way. And they're there to develop these archetypes. It's like you might be really good at something, but and everybody is good at something, but in order to fulfill the meaning of our life, we will meet challenges. And in order to overcome those challenges, we have to bring out something new in ourselves. In other words, we have to unfold another one of these archetypes. So we see these life challenges as very, very valuable. They develop us. They're growth stimulants. Challenges and obstacles and problems, they're growth stimulants. And when we understand these archetypes, we can see, oh, now I'm being pushed into developing the artist in myself, or the healer, in our seminars we really go into what these different archetypes are really good at, so that we can see when they're appropriate. And then you can just say, oh, now I need the priest quality. Now I'm not feeling like the priest at the moment. I'm feeling like something else, but I can retune because I have these exercises, these meditations, these different breaths, these different invocations. I can retune myself, and I can be what I need to be.
This is the new human paradigm, is bringing that heart space in, taking the vision of your life that your soul had, bringing the passion of your heart and teaching your ego to walk in step with it, which always brings a sense of joy. Time can go by pretty fast. I want to make sure that the audience knows your platform, and if you do any one-on-one, we've talked about the workshop in Santa Barbara. Can you just give us an overall of how they the audience can connect with you and what services you and Susanna offer?
Yeah, we have quite a variety of things, from individual counseling and healing work. We do a most amazing kind of healing. We call it Herkalia healing. But then we have seminars, we have retreats, we have private retreats where you come and we work with you one on one for 7 days, constant meditation. But our biggest offering is a 2-year program, which is a university. It's called the University of the Heart, and it gives a master in heart studies. And it prepares one with all the tools necessary for this incredible mystical state called illumination. And that's what we see as the objective of spiritual work. It's beyond enlightenment. It's called illumination, and it's a classic state. We're an authentic school. We're not making this stuff up. We're using materials that have come through the ancients. And through personal transmission, person to person to person down the line. So this is what an authentic school does. We have teachers, and they had teachers, and they had teachers, and so on, right back to the beginning. And in each generation, of course, we add our own experience and our own insights. It gets better and better. But the 2-year university is our best thing. And so you get the details of all that at our IAMHeart.org website. I'm really pleased with the school that's developed. We've been doing this for 40 years, so it's not a new thing. I've been a student of meditation most of my life. I'm 72, and I've been meditating since I was in my 20s. But as I say, the type of meditation that I have worked with has evolved over the time. We're no longer doing this monastic kind of thing. We're doing a meditation that's based on the heart that draws us together. And the university program is a beautiful community of people working together for 2 years. And they really get tight with each other and really become very, very lifelong friends while they learn these practices and these tools.
Well, very nice. I just want to take this moment and thank you for being on the show, Puran. It's been a delight having you as our guest tonight.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
We've been talking with Puran Bear, and the topic tonight has been the 12 archetypes of the heart. The heart is a new brain. It's a new wisdom of the next chapter of our human story. And there's no mistake to why you've been listening to this episode. We're all here to discover a deeper sense of truth of who we are as human beings, having this divine experience of being on such a beautiful and chaotic planet. It's kind of I suggest it's one of the most powerful times to be alive, to find your light in such darkness, in such chaos, and then to personify that light within is a very powerful role to play out. And we've chosen, you're here, I'm here, we've chosen to be part of this. And I love the tools that Puran shared with us tonight about the heart space. For me, it's a fascinating journey to keep unraveling a deeper sense of truth of who we are, and then show up in that truth, bring that truth out into the open, and portray it as you in an authentic way. Well, it's been my pleasure hosting the show. I'm your host, Les Jensen. Thank you for joining us. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.